This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Residents in the U.S. state of Louisiana are still battered from Hurricane Laura and continue to hunker down ahead of Hurricane Delta as it barrels toward the state. The storm, packing winds of up to 115 miles per hour, ranked as a Category 3 hurricane. Forecasters expect it to strengthen before making landfall sometime late Friday between the cities of Lake Charles and Lafayette. The storm could drive a 4 to 11-foot storm surge up Vermilion Bay on the coast, according to the National Hurricane Center. It could also unleash tornadoes as it moves over land and drop up to 10 inches of rain. 13 men in the U.S. state of Michigan have been arrested in connection with a plot to kidnap the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, and other top state officials. AP correspondent Ed Donahue has details.
Governor Gretchen Whitmer calls those arrested
sick and depraved men.
U.S. Attorney Matthew Schneider says the men are violent extremists and view Whitmer as having uncontrolled power and restricting activity because of the coronavirus.
All of us in Michigan can disagree about politics, but those disagreements should never, ever amount to violence.
Whitmer says she understands the frustration during the pandemic.
You don't have to agree with me, but I do ask one thing. Never forget that we are all in this together. Let's show a little kindness and a lot more empathy.
Authorities say some of the men in Michigan said they belonged to or were associated with Wolverine Watchmen, which the government describes as a militia group. I'm Ed Donahue.
The Trump administration has blacklisted virtually all of Iran's financial sector, dealing another blow to an economy that's already reeling under U.S. sanctions. The move will deepen tensions with European nations over Iran. Thursday's move hits 18 Iranian banks that had thus far escaped the bulk of reimposed U.S. sanctions. This is VOA News. The final presidential debate is slated to go on as scheduled. AP's Mike Gracia.
The chair of the Commission on Presidential Debate says the final debate, scheduled for October 22nd, is slated to go on as scheduled in person. Frank Fahrenkopf spoke on CNN Thursday night, hours after President Donald Trump pulled out of the second debate after the commission announced it would be held virtually because the president tested positive for COVID-19. There was no immediate word from Trump's campaign on whether he'll participate in the October 22nd debate. With Trump opting out of the October 15th date, former Vice President Joe Biden's campaign said he'll participate in an ABC News town hall by himself on that day. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Azerbaijan and ethnic Armenians fought with artillery and heavy guns Thursday as the United States, France, and Russia stepped up efforts to secure a ceasefire and avert a wider war in the south. Tanks, heavy artillery, and warplanes were deployed in a week and a half of fierce clashes. The United States, France, and Russia were talking to the Azeri side in Geneva and the Armenian one in Moscow to try to avert a wider war in the south with fierce Turkey, which supports Azeri forces, is being pulled in hours before talks were due to start. Azerbaijan accused Armenian forces of shelling the one city, which lies deep within its territory and not in disputed enclave. Civilians were fired on in the Gorenboy region and in other towns and villages. Both sides accused the other of firing on civilian areas, including ones outside the breakaway enclave. Hundreds of people have been killed as a result. Cuban Prime Minister Manuel Marrero said late Thursday that most of the Caribbean island nation would open to international tourism starting next week as it moved towards a new normality after containing its coronavirus outbreak. The country, which closed its borders 6 months ago in a bid to contain the spread of the virus, has been gradually opening up to tourism ahead of the November-March high season, first in the Northern Keys and then in the Varadero Beach Resort. 13 of Cuba's 16 provinces will now be open to tourism, Marrero told a roundtable discussion broadcast to the nation, albeit not yet the capital, Havana, which only just appears to have curbed a second wave of infections with strict measures, including a curfew. International tourism is one of Cuba's top hard currency earners, so its suspension this year has dealt a blow to the cash-strapped economy, even as the United States has continued to harden its decades-old trade embargo on Cuba. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Money Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi women are protesting today to demand gender parity.
We want to raise the women's voices. We want to hold the duty bearers accountable. We want to put women's issues right on the agenda of the appointing authorities.
An ultimatum for Kenya's president to dissolve parliament by Monday, October 12. Sierra Leone's much-anticipated corruption interview failed again to materialize on Thursday. And Zambia's Electoral Commission meets with political party leaders ahead of the 2021 election.
I have to confirm that we remain deeply concerned about the lack of consensus on how the election of 2021 will be handled, where there will be satisfaction on the side of the stakeholders.
And a Ghanaian businessman promotes the benefits of maintaining forests. Those stories plus Samson Umali's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Groups in Malawi have called for a nationwide protest today, Friday, to demand gender parity in President Lazarus Chakwera's administration. The women say the president has failed so far to meet the 60 to 40 gender representation requirements. President Chakwera, who has only been in office for 100 days, says his administration will achieve gender equality, but through a step-by-step approach. Barbara Banda is chairperson of the Gender Coordination Network. She says women are not happy and want to be heard.
We want to raise the women's voices. We want to hold the duty bearers accountable. We want to put women's issues right on the agenda of the appointing authorities.
You are claiming systemic discrimination by President Chakwera in public appointments, but the president has only been in office for the last 100 days. Why not give him time? After all, he said that he's going to try to achieve gender parity.
Yes, because what has happened is that we have been meeting president. We also, before he got appointed, while he was in opposition, did give him our women's manifesto, which he signed. And he did promise that his government, if elected into power, parity, and hence we are holding him accountable.
One of the things is that, first of all, let me ask, did you encourage any qualified women to submit applications for appointments after the president took office?
We were not given that privilege. These appointments were not advertised. So we did not have any information about women submitting their names.
President Chakwera, the last time I heard, he is out of the country right now in Tanzania. Why not wait until he is back and then seek an audience with him?
Okay, we have already had an audience with him recently, and not only him, but even the office of the secretary to cabinet. And they both did promise us that this issue was going to be addressed. And we believe women issues and gender equality cannot be achieved in one go. But what we are calling for at the moment is to look at them observing the rule of law. We do have a constitution that calls for equality. But we do have an implementing instrument under our Gender Equality Act, which is saying the bottom line for achieving gender equality is 40% at the least. And that's what we are looking at. That's what we are calling for, just being compliant to the law, because we know that the other processes are incremental, they're development processes. So parity we will achieve at a later date. But today we're just saying, hey, the law says ABC and they are not complying.
How many women do you know right now, Barbara, that are in the current administration, and how many more women would you like to see in the government?
I would say there's 38% in terms of cabinet appointments, and most of that 38% is at deputy level. And then we had about 23% in presidential advisors, and now we have 20%. What we are seeking is the 40%. That is the bare minimum.
Thank you so much again, Barbara. We do appreciate very much.
Thanks, James.
Barbara Banda is chairperson of the Gender Coordination Network of Malawi. She was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. The Law Society of Kenya and other activist groups have given President Uhuru Kenyatta until Monday, October 12, to dissolve parliament. Kenya's Chief Justice last month ordered the president to dissolve parliament because parliament failed to meet the constitutional requirement allowing women to occupy one-third of the seats in parliament. Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi.
Since 2012, Kenyan courts have told parliament to enact a gender parity law, but parliament has failed to do so. Law Society of Kenya President Nelson Havi told a news conference on Thursday that the Law Society will lead Kenyans to occupy parliament on Monday in a new push to force President Uhuru Kenyatta to dissolve parliament over its failure to pass the two-thirds gender rule. He called on Kenyans to join the movement, calling for the dissolution of parliament and election of a fresh group of eligible leaders.
Parliament must be dissolved effective the 12th of October 2020. We make this call not only because the Chief Justice has advised the President of the Republic of Kenya to dissolve parliament. As we speak right now, the cabinet itself is unlawfully constituted. And when the Chief Justice advises the President of the Republic of Kenya to dissolve parliament, the Chief Justice does not act on his own. He acts on behalf of the people of Kenya. And similarly, when the President of the Republic of Kenya is required to dissolve parliament, he does not do that as a fiat. He does that as a delegate of the people of Kenya.
The We Are 52%, which is a feminist collective, was the first to file a case challenging the constitutionality of the Kenyan legislature. Marilyn Kamuru, a member of We Are 52%, says Chief Justice David Maraga's directive was perfectly in line with the constitution and should not be challenged in court.
What is in court is the Chief Justice's advisory opinion. What is not in court, and it is not controverted, is that the 12th Parliament is unconstitutional. And per Article 3.2, it is unlawful. We are speaking about a matter that has existed since 2017, and it is uncontested and uncontroverted. And we are not asserting that we are in any way countermanding the court process. What framework allows an unconstitutional body to seek protection of the same constitution that it is violating? And that's a distinction that I think is really important that Kenyans understand.
President Kenyatta, however, has not commented on the Chief Justice's advisory issued 2 weeks ago. Meanwhile, the fate of legislatures and senators hang in the balance as Kenyans eagerly await President Kenyatta's decision on whether he will dissolve parliament to satisfy the constitutional provision calling for one-third of seats to be occupied by women. There are concerns by some Kenyans that it is not economically feasible for the country to hold an election for 290 members of parliament and 47 senators, barely 2 years to the general elections. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Political party leaders in Zambia, including President Edgar Lungu and his ruling Patriotic Front Party, met on Thursday with the country's electoral commission. They raised wide-ranging issues from longer time period for voter registration to whether the electoral commission should be granted powers to disqualify violent political parties. They also discussed what some call high fees for nominating candidates. Zambia will hold presidential election in 2021. Nevers Mamba is the leader of the opposition New Hope Movement for Multi-Party Democracy in Zambia. He says political parties remain concerned about how the 2021 elections would be conducted to the satisfaction of all stakeholders.
First of all, unfortunately, I was unable to attend because I'm not in the country, but our party was well represented. The vice president and our national secretary were in attendance. I have since been briefed by our vice president as to what transpired in the meeting. I have to confirm that we remain deeply concerned about the lack of consensus on how the election of 2021 will be handled, where there will be satisfaction on the side of the stakeholders. I do understand that the Electoral Commission of Zambia was basically speaking at or to the leaders of opposition political parties, and it was not necessarily a meeting where consensus was reached on the most critical issues of concern. For instance, the issues of registration cards, which are necessary for somebody to become a voter, which are being given to underage people, and foreigners. It was raised, but the ECZ, you know, made it sound like it was just a by-the-way thing. We challenged again the online voter registration that some of us feel is connected to another program, and then it is also going to replace our current voters list, a situation we are opposed to.
Last month, you were summoned by the Zambian police to answer questions about your claims that the ruling Patriotic Front Party and President Edgar Lungu had recruited some South Africans to help rig the 2021 election. Were your concerns satisfied?
Absolutely not. None of that was tabled. We did table our concerns about some of the irregularities that we've been talking about. But I must confirm that some of the information that I had, we gave it to the police for the investigation purposes. The Electoral Commission of Zambia did not address itself to any one of those concerns. What they were doing on the other hand was to give us a program towards the election of what they are going to be doing and what they have lined up for us. It was not a meeting of consensus. Our concern is that what Zambia needs today is to have confidence in the electoral process, and we do not have any of the two.
Nevos Momba is the president of the opposition New Hope Movement for Multi-Party Democracy in Zambia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 9th. In Sierra Leone, the highly anticipated alleged corruption interview with former President Ernest Pai Kuruma failed again to materialize on Thursday. The interview was originally scheduled to take place on Monday, October 5th, but moved to yesterday, Thursday, at the request of the former president. The Anti-Corruption Commission wants to question the two-term former president about alleged corruption while he was in office. A video provided by the corruption agency shows hundreds of people, many of them are motorcycles, blocking the road leading to the former president's residence. Sidi Yaya Tunis is the acting national publicity secretary of the opposition All People's Congress Party of Sierra Leone. He says anti-corruption agency officials called off the interview to de-escalate tension.
The former president, Dr. Ernest Bai Kuruma, was at his residence. He was there with members of his legal team, headed by the former Attorney General and Minister of Justice. But unfortunately, he waited till like 3 o'clock, and he was later informed that the investigators decided to return to Freetown because of what they say to de-escalate situation. To them, they said there was tension around the area, and so they did not feel safe to access the residence of the former president for them to go ahead with the interview.
I saw a video of hundreds of people, motorcycles particularly, riding around the street, basically making the streets impassable. Whose job was it to make sure that those people give way to the Anti-Corruption Commission officials?
Well, I don't know exactly which video you're referring to, you know, motorcycle riders riding the streets. The former president's residence is on the outskirts of Makini, on a very narrow street, not motorable to public vehicles, if I can put it that way. So I don't know exactly which video that is. But what I can say is the former president himself showed his willingness. He even called the Anti-Corruption Commissioner, Francis Benkefala, and reassured him of his readiness and willingness to meet with his investigators. He called the Inspector General of Police and assured him of calm and assured him of security. And the legal team, headed by the Attorney General and Minister of Justice, former Joseph Fitzgerald Kamara, called members of the investigative team that came from the Anti-Corruption Commission and even assured them that if they did not feel safe to drive in their own vehicles, he can drive them himself in his vehicle to the former president's residence, just to show them that, yes, the security situation is calm. They can drive to the former president with no harm. Because the former president really wanted this interview to go ahead. That is why he made all those extra moves to show his readiness and to show the world that as a law-abiding citizen, he was ready and he still is willing and ready to receive the investigative team so that this interview can go on.
Sidi Yahya Tunis is the acting National Publicity Secretary of the opposition All People's Congress Party of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. A World Bank report shows that Ghana loses at least 315,000 hectares of its forest each year. To help change that, a Ghanaian project is promoting sustainable forestry, teaching people the economic benefits of letting trees stand and surrounding vegetation live. Stacey Knott reports from Brema Bedum in Ghana.
Wellington Baden calls his lush 85-hectare forest a green supermarket. It produces fish, wood products, seedlings, fruits, and essential oils. Baden grows a range of trees, some fast-growing, many indigenous and endangered trees, as well as aromatic plants that produce natural oils used in perfumes. While forestry is usually a long-term project, where the income comes with the harvest, Portal Forest Estates generates income both in the short and long term. Baden is starting to harvest the trees he planted 20 years ago, but he's replacing them and creating other businesses within the forest to ensure its future and benefit to the surrounding communities, which he says is the key to sustainability.
Having a working forest is, I would say, a key component to restoring forest cover because, one, it provides jobs for the community, and the encroachment basically happens because people need to survive.
One of Baden's products is natural oils. Baden is working with local farmers to grow plants like ylang-ylang and citronella, whose oils he can sell on international markets. Chemist Justice Crensell spends his days distilling the plants to create the oils. He says he's the only one from his graduating class in this line of work, which he believes will help Ghana's future.
The fact that you're not really damaging the forest, you're not cutting down trees, and the fact that we don't use any fertilizers in the forest, so everything comes from Mother Nature, and that's a bit mind-boggling.
He hopes this project will become a blueprint to ensure other forests are spared degradation when people see the long-term financial benefits held within them. 90 miles away, campaigners have been battling to save a different forest from government mining plans. Daryl Bosu from environmental non-governmental organisation Arocha Ghana says the working forest idea is key to stopping tree loss in Ghana by showing people the benefits in the short, medium and long term of keeping forest cover. He says business models like Baden's are imperative for the sustainable use of natural resources, and they can also encourage conservation and restoration.
I think it's a good inspiration for every entrepreneur, a business person and all of that, so that now forest management is not only the requisite, I would say, mandate of government, but also of every individual, because opportunities for benefits is enormous.
Baden is also planning a bigger distillery and an eco-resort and learning centre within the forest. He says the learning centre will train farmers and educate visitors about the forest project. He wants it to inspire people to see the benefits in sustainable forests, creating what he calls wealth in perpetuity. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Bremen Badum.
Next week, a new contemporary art gallery is set to open in Accra, Ghana, marking an important step in the city's continued evolution on the global scene. Adora Mba is founder of the new space, Ida Contemporary Art Gallery. She tells Ricky Stryer the gallery will focus on emerging artists in West Africa.
For example, a lot of the artists I'll be working with will predominantly do their first solo exhibition with me. Few of the artists I'm working with are self-taught and have maybe done a couple of group shows of that. So when we use the word emerging, we're trying to, it essentially means fresh, new talent, new to the art space, new to the art industry. And then we work with them in particular because we want to evolve and grow with them. We want to navigate them the sharky waters of the art industry, but we mostly just want to find the fresh, exciting talent that are going to then have that long, lovely, long career in the art industry.
What was your driving force? What was your reason behind opening this new gallery?
Art has always been my industry, an industry I love. I think for me, you know, the difference was the choice I had was being half Nigerian, half Ghanaian. I could have moved back to Lagos, but I did feel that Nigeria, you know, already has quite a thriving art market. Ghana, on the other hand, I found interesting because there's a lot of talented artists. I mean, dare one say the most talented is coming from Ghana at the moment in terms of the international art market. But I mean, there's literally one or two commercial galleries at that, no museum properly to speak of or show. So a lot of the artists were leaving here to, you know, to have thriving careers in the Western industry. So, you know, they'll go to New York, they'll go to LA, they'll go to Paris, London, you know, join galleries there. So for me, I wanted to open up shop here, one, to help build the local community, art community, help understanding and education of the art and how beneficial it is economically, socially, politically, everything, and how beautiful and amazing it is, but also, you know, on the business side of it, you know, less competition. You know, it's not a saturated market. So I have the freedom to be a lot more open and decide what I want to do in terms of our program and our strategy. I hope that in turn spurs other people to open up galleries and then we'll have more infrastructures, more museums, and then a lot of the artists that are here won't run up so quickly.
Adora Umba is founder of Ida Contemporary Art Gallery. She was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Accra, Ghana. Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with a look at the international friendlies involving African countries this weekend. After 11 months without senior international football, Africa's national teams will return to action this international break with Nigeria taking on Algeria, Ghana squaring it out with Mali, South Africa will meet fellow South African side Namibia. In the meantime, the management of the Nigerian national football team, the Super Eagles, has dismissed reports in some quarters that some of the players in the team's Austria camp have tested positive for COVID-19 ahead of this Friday's clash against the Desert Foxes of Algeria. Some sections of the media had reported on Thursday that four players of the Super Eagles tested positive for the deadly COVID-19, but media officer of the Super Eagles, Tony Ibitoye, expressed dismay over such reports, noting that results of the tests carried out on the players on Thursday were still being awaited as at the time of filing this report.
In a few minutes from now, we'll be doing the mandatory pre-game COVID-19 test. It's part of the protocol put together by FIFA that 24 hours before the game, the players are tested to be sure that everybody is clean. So we'll be doing that in the next couple of minutes. Hopefully, we don't have positive cases to report.
Staying with football news, Egyptian Football Association has announced that each team will be able to register up to four foreign players in their squad for the 2020-2021 season. The EFA has kept the number unchanged for the new season, with each team also allowed to register an additional fifth player, providing that he is Palestinian, Syrian, Tunisian, Moroccan, Algerian, or Libyan. In basketball news, three teams, Cape Verde, Chad, and South Sudan, will tussle for a ticket to make it to the last round of qualifiers for the FIBA AfroBasket 2021 when they all meet at the Yaounde Sports Complex in Cameroon. All three teams were handed wild cards with the games to be played from October the 22nd to the 24th, 2020. The winner of the Wildcat tournament will take on Egypt, Morocco, and Uganda in Group E of the qualifiers from November 27th to 29th in Alexandria, Egypt. And finally, in athletics news, Ugandan Joshua Cheptegei smashed the men's 10,000 meters world record as the Valencia World Record Day event lived up to its name during midweek. Cheptegei crossed the line at a near empty Turia Stadium in a stunning 26 minutes, 11.02 seconds to beat the time of 26 minutes, 17.53 seconds set in 2005 by Ethiopia Kenenisa Bekele by over 6 seconds. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ray Key Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, saying have a good weekend.